This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
The headlines read, Brad Unger selected as new head coach at Culver Stockton College. Now listen, we're watching the College World Series right now. It is exciting. So this is the perfect time to delve into college baseball ranks. We're going to talk to a very top college baseball coach in the NAIA, and we're going to talk about college baseball and what, you know, coaches look for in players. Also, how they train. A lot of different things we're going to talk about college baseball. This is going to be exciting. And folks around the world and the U.S., welcome to the show. You're listening to the show which interviews baseball's best coaching minds who love the challenge of status quo. And I am your host, Pete Caliendo. I am so glad that you are joining us today. Before we start, don't forget, do me a favor, go to our YouTube channel. Check out Baseball Tips of the Day that we have up there. Just go to Peter Caliendo. And for anyone listening that has players 14, 15, or 16 years old, we are heading to Havana, Cuba, December 26th to the 31st, 2019, to compete against some of the great players, Cuban baseball. It is a lot of fun, great culture, great people. We're going to learn about Cuban baseball and also compete daily and also train with the Cuban players. If you're interested or want to recommend a player, just email me at petercaliendo@att.net. And you know you could email me anytime about anything in the game of baseball or about the show. Love to get your emails, so please do so. All right, today's guest, Bradley Unger, the head coach, just newly announced Culver Stockton College. And let me tell you a little bit, full disclosure, Bradley was a student who went on in the Caliendo Sports International Baseball Trip. Later on, I had the privilege of having him on the USA Baseball Great Lakes National Team Identification Program as a coach. Know Bradley firsthand, not only as a player, but also as a person. Just top-notch all the way. Now, there's a lot. He's got a great background. I'll just give you a little background. He came from Avanci Community College. There he had a total record of 141-16. In 2016, he had a school record of 37 wins and went on to the NJCAA Division III World Series. He's an associate scout with the Toronto Blue Jays. He's still a assistant regional director with the Great Lakes National Team Identification Program, which is the USA Baseball program, and a regional director with the National Pitching Association, which is one of the best pitching programs in the world, no doubt. Now, there may be a couple things here. He may tell us that he may have to drop out of one of those things. I don't know yet. We're going to find out simply because now he is the head coach at Culver Stockton College. Now, we're going to put his show notes and also his background on the show website, and then you'll be able to see more about Bradley. But let's get started because this is going to be a great conversation. Let's welcome Bradley Unger to the show. Bradley, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thank you for the introduction there, Pete. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'll tell you what, I know there's a lot more to it. You've coached, I know you were, it was 16 years, I believe, in 16 seasons in Aurora with the American Legion, directing your team to over 200 wins there. You've got a great coaching background. But you know what? The other part is you're also very young. So you got a great future. Congratulations on your new job at Culver Stockton College. Tell us a little bit about the college, what you got going on there.
Yeah, thank you. Again, thank you so much for having me on. There was several opportunities this summer that presented themselves to me in the coaching world. And, I chose Culver Stockton really because of just the atmosphere here, the campus, the belief in student athletics, student athletes specifically. And, you know, our athletic director here, Pat Atwell, and our president and Dr. Kelly Thompson were two of the most gracious people I've ever met in the industry. And really, I just could see myself working here for them. And so they've entrusted me with the program, and they want to win. At the same time, they want to do things the right way. And I believe in player development, and I'm sure we're going to get into some of those discussions here. It felt like the right fit, and I couldn't be happier to be here. Everybody I've met, the coaching staff here, the support staff, the senior leadership team, I mean, they have just been just amazing. The local community, I mean, everybody is open arms and welcomed me and my family. I really feel home here. So hopefully the future is going to be bright and we're going to bring in some quality baseball players, quality families, and you know, do everything on the field and off the field and be an asset to the institution.
Well, folks, I can tell you firsthand, if I had a son or daughter, whatever sport he was in, and Bradley was the head coach, I would definitely send him to him simply because it's not just about the sport. I know that he will develop young men and women in any sport that he's in. You know, you don't know this, but he also has his master's degree from Concordia University and majoring in coaching and athletic administration, along with exercise, sports science. All that stuff really works in great with the game of baseball. Bradley, listen, this is a great opportunity. I think let's take advantage of it, you know, because I want people to know, not just in the U.S., but around the world, because players all over the world are looking to play college baseball. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, where kids fit in sometimes in college baseball, because a lot of them want to go play. They think, you know, okay, I'll play Division I and Arizona and all, and the, you know, the big schools, the Miami's, right, everything here on television. But before we get to that, tell us why a player that you're recruiting should play at your school. This is your opportunity to kind of give that sales pitch a little bit on a podcast.
Sure. Awesome. Well, first of all, they're going to find out that everybody cares and really is pulling in the same direction for their success. So I think here at Culver Stockton and really NAI in general, I think you're going to get a very privatized or personal you know, education. So it's fairly smaller schools. They still offer athletic scholarships as well as academic scholarships. But here at Culver, I think the thing that really stands out for us is just how athletic and student athletic oriented the campus is. The first thing you see when you pull onto campus is our baseball field. And as you come around, you'll see the soccer and lacrosse practice fields and football practice fields. And then right at the heart of campus is our football stadium and softball stadiums. And as you move your way through the backside of campus, you'll see our Mabee Center, that's 3 years old, a brand new weight room facility, indoor gymnasium, CrossFit classrooms, just a state of the art facility that's just top notch. And then we still have our Charles Fieldhouse, and we have our indoor hitting facility that's open 24/7. So student athletes can, you know, obviously, you know, outside of our practice time, can come in and get work done and, you know, basically relax and really do some of their own training on their own if they want. And so for us, I mean, just, you know, for a college that's 1,100 students, you know, obviously you have that intimate setting. We have a 14-to-1 faculty to student ratio. So it's very individualized. Something that Culver Stockton does that's really awesome. It's one of only two schools in the country that do it. Is we do a 12-3 academic breakdown. So typically a student will take 15 credit hours for full time to be on track for their degree. We'll do 12 hours in the first 12 weeks. So they'll only take four of those classes. They get their Thanksgiving break where there's absolutely no school. They don't have to cram over that holiday. And then they get to come back for the final 3 weeks and they get to take just one course. And really, it's a super concentrated focus. So typically you'll take your harder classes there, but they also do something that you have a passion for, and that's travel. So we do emphasize traveling abroad and getting those outstanding experiences of different cultures. And it goes towards their degree. So the school actually gives them credits, travel credits, up to $1,500. They accrue as they put their time in here at Culver Stockton. Transfer students, they give them a little bit more as they come in as juniors and even seniors to get them caught up. But they use those funds for travel. So it makes it very affordable for the student athletes to get those you know, those experiences. And then also they have internship programs during those 3 week periods. So it's part of their curriculum. Most majors require an internship in order to achieve the degree. And Culver Stockton has 98% placement within the first 6 months of graduation in jobs. And actually they were just ranked number one college in the state of Missouri for employment after graduation. So a lot of great things at Culver Stockton, but for us specifically, it was just the emphasis on student athletes and how important athletics plays a role here in our recruitment, but also in just the academic success and the collegiate experience for our students here.
You know, and I love it, because all I'm hearing is education, education, education. And I know there's a baseball aspect to it. And, You know, now I'm going to play the parent, you know, the mom and dad here a little bit, because, you know, sure. In some fairness, it's not fair to the parents. A lot of times they really don't realize what they're getting into, but you will hear some of these issues, and I want you to, you know, rebuff them a little bit, because you know the other side of it. You know, one of the areas that, well, I'm going to go to Arizona because, you know, I'm going to get exposure there, and then I'm going to get signed by a pro team. You know, why would I go anywhere else?
Sure. Well, for us, well, you know, again, you know, not to brag, or, you know, I've been blessed with some great individuals in my life that have mentored me, you being one of them. You know, I tell some of my players and prospective student athletes, you know, I do scout with the Toronto Blue Jays, and, you know, you'll have a scout looking at you every single day you practice with us. Mm-hmm. So that helps. Obviously, the technology and the internet and you know, social media being what it is today, and how impactful that can be to, you know, impact lives is, you know, if you're good enough to play, you know, if you have a coach that's willing to promote you, which I think, you know, my track record speaks for itself, you know, sending guys on and, you know, we've had draft picks play at Waubonsie, and we've had guys go Division One out of Waubonsie. We've had a lot of success with players going to the Division Two and NAIA ranks. So for me, I think, you know, if a head coach is willing to promote their players and that player has a certain skill set that can play in the professional ranks, then they're going to have that opportunity. Scouts, you know, we're always looking for players that can play. So, I mean, obviously they have to have, you know, a minimum skill set in order to do that. You know, they have to be realistic at the same time as well. And sometimes that's a long road, you know, whether you go into independent ball or even, you know, low A, or you're just getting signed. But still, you know, there are going to be opportunities for those players, or even going overseas, you know. I know you've helped a tremendous amount of players do that in your career as well. So, you know, the opportunities are there if they have the skill set. I think for me, you know, when a player is weighing a Division I offer to an NAIA school or a Division II offer, I think they need to look at the big picture. Obviously, they want to know what kind of education they're going to get. How can that education impact them moving forward in their professional lives? And then also they want to, you know, campus life, atmosphere. What's their experiences going to be, you know, during that time? Are they living off campus, on campus? What kind of resources are at their disposal to really help them grow? Some, you know, student athletes are outstanding in a large setting. Some student athletes want more individualized attention. They want the smaller class sizes. So really it just depends on what the best fit is for that student athlete and their families. For me personally, having the MPA background and the, you know, the kinesiology exercise science degree, for us, you know, I feel that we can bring a world-class baseball program. I don't care what level you're at. Player development is absolutely key in everything that we do here at Culver Stockton and what I do in my career. So for me, it's measure, quantify, and defend. So we base everything off of science. If we can't put quantifiable data to it and defend our teachings, whether that's from strength, stamina, mass development to actual human movement pieces, then we throw it in the garbage can. Every single student athlete that's in our program, they walk different, they talk different, they move different, they play different, and we want them to play the way that they play. We're not recruiting a player to try to make them all the same. We're recruiting individuals, and hopefully we can play as a collective group, but we want them to get them bigger, faster, stronger, and we want them to play and move as efficiently within their kinematic sequence as they possibly can. And by doing that, we've seen great growth. We've seen big jumps. The player development, again, you know, everything that we do is digitized. So we put everything, every player gets an app and a Google Drive in our program. And they have aspects to all of that data. So literally it's at their fingertips. And we use that data in every single thing that we do in our program.
You know what? Love to hear that. And I can't wait to get into this player development with you. The last question I really want to address when it comes from the baseball side of it, from the, recruiting side of it, would be scholarships. You know, everybody obviously thinks that there's a million scholarships out there. Let's talk about the scholarships. What's my best way as a student to get a scholarship so I can play baseball at a program like yours?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing, and it's not to be cliche, you know, because I know student athletes are hearing this more and more every day now, but academics really is vital. It's really vital. So, I mean, they can't neglect their studies in high school. You know, as a college coach, there is only a certain number of dollars to go around for athletic scholarship money. And I don't care what level you're at, D1, D2, NAIA. even junior college. You know, every school has a certain allotted, you know, recruitment pool for scholarship dollars. And so when you have two players, and there's a lot of really talented players out there, but when you have two players that are, you know, fairly equal, you know, if they're both 6 foot, they're both third basemen, they both throw 85 across the diamond, they both have an exit velocity of 95, you know, who do you recruit? Well, you know, player A has a 3.5 GPA and player B has a 2.8 GPA. And again, 2.8 doesn't mean that's poor, but you're going to offer the 3.5 guy first because, one, you can give him more academic money. Maybe you don't have to give him as much scholarship money. Mm. So you can spread those funds out to other players and hopefully have a deeper incoming class. Or, you know, you're going to think to yourself, well, the player that's got a 3.5 is certainly a little bit more disciplined in the classroom. Hopefully he stays eligible. Hopefully he's going to work hard, because typically success on the baseball field and success in the classroom absolutely correlate. It's not in all cases, right? It's not always. But on the whole, if you look big picture, it absolutely correlates. A player who takes, you know, academics seriously and you know, puts everything they have into it, is usually going to be a pretty good ball player out on the field as well. So we have two promises in our program. The first one is, if they can give us everything they've got in the classroom, in training, on the field, out, you know, in our you know, modalities and all the things that we do, then we're going to change their life forever. That's not a promise we take lightly, and it's not a promise that, you know, we give out to the guys, you know, year one, year two, year three. I mean, it's something that we talk about, you know, often, you know, day one, day 10, day 20, you know, and we're always constantly pushing guys. They have to give us everything they've got. And so it's big, but academic, if students want to get scholarships, athletic or otherwise, academics is the best place to start.
You know what? I'm so thrilled you brought that up. Hopefully parents and players, you're listening, because that's how important academics are. Hey, Bradley, listen, when you look for players, this is interesting. I think it'd be like to know, what kind of players are you looking for? Now, you can talk about the talent side also, whatever you like to, but what kind of players do you, you know, what are the characteristics that you look for in a young man when you're recruiting that player?
Well, first and foremost, we look for guys that have a little bit of baseball IQ, and we look for guys who are pretty versatile. So they've played multiple sports in high school. It's not to say specialized guys aren't somebody we would consider, but when you're talking about, if we have our pick of the litter, we want somebody who has played multiple sports, has had more than one or two coaches in their lives, you know, maybe been taught, you know, several different ways. You know, and then we look for grinders, guys who can really just go out there and play, you know, those guys that are just absolutely filthy at the end of a game. Maybe they went 0-for-4 that day, but they still found a way to get just, you know, filthy, dirty. So, you know, we want guys that, you know, Tom House has a saying in the NPA, Mach 3 hair on fire. And that's kind of, yeah, as you know, and that's kind of what we're looking for. We're looking for guys who have big heart, lots of passion. You know, they don't need to necessarily know what their future goals are or, you know, have all those specifics, what they're going to major in, you know, that kind of stuff. But we want to have some guys that just, you know, have that athleticism in their bones, you know, and, you know, those high motor guys. And so, you know, with all the science that we do, and I know we'll get into this, but, you know, we really, you know, we can build a lot of things in a setting. So, I mean, talent is really important, but talent is certainly not everything. And so having that passion and having that willingness to learn and try new things and grow as a player, you know, certainly develop, you know, those are the things that really, you know, we can win with. So that's the type of player that we look for. Not to say that the 6'5" left-handed guy that can throw 90 out of high school isn't someone we're interested in. I mean, I think everybody's interested in that.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, you know, we understand that, you know, there's going to be a significant player development piece in there. So
what do you ask a guy, a coach, when you call him, if he's a high school coach or maybe he's a junior college coach, and, you know, you've seen a young man play maybe 3-4 times and in major competition, possibly some showcases. What do you ask the coach about him?
Well, the first thing I ask is, how does he treat his parents? That's the first thing I ask. So we all know, and we're all listening, we're all guilty of this, is that, you know, when mom says something when you're a kid and you're, oh, come on, mom, you know, or dad, or, you know, or something that you don't agree with. But I always kind of look at it like that. If a kid treats his parents a certain way and that's who he, you know, give his life for and love, How's he going to treat me as a coach? So that's the first thing. I want to know what kind of, well, how did he treat his parents, and what kind of a teammate is he? How has he been in their program? How's he been to work with? Because that's what we're doing. Obviously, I tell this to some recruits as well. You ask a player, do you always agree with what mom and dad tell you? And the answer, of course not, but you listen to it because you know that your best interests are their priority. So every student athlete in my program, they have to know, we have to build that trust, that integrity. We have to know, they have to know that their best interests are my number one priority. So when we start crunching their numbers and we start, making some changes or asking them to move certain ways or, the mobility programs are customized to them and, there's certain things that they don't, understand or want to do, they have to understand the big picture, what it's for. So, so those are the things, but that's the kind of stuff that we want to know about incoming recruits. Just, what kind of people are they? How do they treat their parents? How do they treat their teammates, their peers? Certainly how they interact with their coaches on a daily basis.
Folks, check out Coach Unger on Twitter at B_Unger, UNGER number 34. So B_Unger 34 on Twitter. Check them out.
Bradley, got to ask you, when you go to games, I know you go to a lot of games to recruit players, to see them yourself, and I'm sure you've got assistants that possibly may help. What gets you kind of riled up when you see certain things that go on during games, especially when you're seeing a certain player you like, things that kind of turn you off? So our players and parents and even coaches can learn from this.
Yeah. Well, for us, it's a lot of it has to do with body language, body posture. You've heard the cliche, baseball is a game of failure and really all things in life, that you're going to have adversity. So we want players who not necessarily don't show, any emotion, emotion's okay. But when you get to that negative, the shoulders hunch over, the head goes straight to the, point to the ground, eyes down, you can see that body language and body posture. So, we want guys who can, go next pitch, really stay in the moment. What's in the past is in the past, learn from it, grow from it. Easier said than done, but certainly the guys we want to put in our program are guys who can look past mistakes and keep playing the game the right way.
That also leads to love to know how you handle practices, kind of get your style, let's call it that way, your practice style. Are you one of these guys, that, is heavily involved in it, when there's errors and mistakes, how do you deal with those, the organizational aspect? Give us a little background when a player comes to play for you, what it's going to be like.
Sure. So our practices are posted in our dugout or in our workout facilities, locker rooms, field house, indoor hitting facility, things like that. So guys know what's going to be expected of them that day. But they're not so structured or so rigid that, we can't, take an extra few minutes with a player, pull somebody out of the, off to the side. Or I think, any coach, should have the power, I suppose, to just, stay with something. You kind of can feel the energy of a practice when guys are engaged, when you have a positive learning environment. So those are the things, as far as practice goes. But how we handle adversity and failure in practice is we embrace it. So we're gonna embrace failure. We're not gonna accept it, but we have something where we bolted a bell in our dugout, and so when guys are playing not to fail, especially early on in a career, for us, me being formerly from the JUCO landscape, we'd have incoming freshmen or we have sophomores that were leaving our program. They're going to be incoming juniors, so a lot of adversity in different landscapes, guys transferring and things like that. Nobody wants to, go into a new program and disappoint. Everybody wants to impress the head coach. So oftentimes you'll get players that'll come in and they're just so terrified to make a mistake that they play scared or they play a little bit more timid than what we look for. We want guys to come in and play the game the right way. I said it earlier, Mach 3, hair on fire. We want guys to play hard and not be afraid to make those mistakes. And so there are times where we'll pull a guy off after a mistake. We teach the teach-heavy program. We teach the whys, why we do something. We want to measure, quantify, and defend. And, we'll send them in that dugout. They'll ring that bell, and everybody kind of stops what they're doing for, a 1-1,000, 2-1,000. We clap, we cheer, hoot, holler, whatever it might be to embrace that failure. And then it just narrows our focus back to the job at hand and gets everybody, refocused up. So our coaches, we do have whistles. At the beginning of our day, at the bottom of our workout sheet or a practice plan, it says 5 push-ups, or it might say 5 sit-ups, 5 crunches, whatever it is. It's not so physically taxing that it's going to really gas the guys. But at the same time, we want them to narrow their focus. So if a coach is in any drill at any point on the field, so if I'm working with pitchers down in the pen and I have an infield coach working with our infielders and he blows the whistle, all of our pitchers, we all stop what we're doing and everybody gives us those 5 sit-ups, those 5 push-ups, whatever it is. Again, we just want to narrow that focus. We want to keep it exciting and we want to keep it the competitive excellence where we're competing in everything that we do. But we want to stay focused in the task at hand.
You know, what's some of the things you might do you mentioned you embrace the failure. Is there certain things, and obviously there's a lot goes on in practice, but is there certain things that you might concentrate on or ideas you can give our coaches on how to, I guess, deal with the failure in practice? I mean, do you put them under certain situations to put them under pressure, or are there certain things you might do, whether it's bullpens or whether it's, infield, outfield, anything that in your own practices that helps them deal with that or prepare for that failure?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do. So that's part of our character development piece to our program. That's one of our core values. It's really easy for a coach to stand in front of a team and preach and, give you all the adjectives that you use for an athlete, sportsmanship and poise and dedication, work ethic, anything. I mean, there's a million of them out there. For us, we like to put them in teachable, coachable moments. So there are a lot of controlled scenarios. There are a lot of controlled scrimmages and things like that. One thing that we've done in the past, in our controlled scrimmages, we will put them in scenarios where we absolutely know they're going to fail. So we'll give our umpires our signals, and a strike becomes a ball becomes a strike. There's going to be a guy with the game on the line at the plate that's going to strike out looking because we're going to make sure it happens. And so we do that. We do that on purpose. And everything we do in our program is pretty much on video. A lot of videography in our program. So. And it's quick, once that happens, we'll call a timeout. We'll bring everybody up and we bring them into that huddle. We turn that tablet around and we show them what it looked like. This is what your body language looked like here. This is, you didn't get that call. And this is what you looked like when you screamed into your glove or when you let your emotion, kind of show on your sleeve there. We tried to do that early on in the fall when we're getting guys developed and introduced to our program, just from the standpoint where they're, hopefully not scouts in the stands. With money in their pocket or evaluating and things like that. We want to clean some of that stuff up. But when you can see yourself on video, I mean, we really do, see it, feel it, do it. And that, that really brings it home for the guys. And so that's one thing that we do. But we absolutely put them in situations where they are going to fail. Where there's no question about it.
Well, we talk about it, and I love that because we talk about, failure is so difficult. That's why I wanted to address, if failure is so tough, because it is tough to deal with. I had a hard time with it as a player, not just in baseball, in other sports. And, so I would assume that we need to really focus hard on that failure aspect because, I'm going on the basis of if you've done it 1,000 times in practice and you've failed at it and then recovered, then when it comes to a game, it will be a little easier to deal with.
Absolutely, yeah. And positive self-talk is so vital. I mean, there's so many, great resources out there and coaches out there that could probably do even more than what we do. But, positive self-talk and putting themselves, just even if it's just closing your eyes for 5 seconds when you're in the on-deck circle and trying to stay in the moment, stay present, next pitch, really just – focus on the task at hand. And that's kind of how we run our practices. And that's really where that, those controlled scrimmages and scenarios come in where, again, we'll ring that bell, just kind of narrow our focus, or we'll blow a whistle, narrow the focus. We just kind of try to, really train our guys to get back to what they do well and focus on that. And, learn from the adversity, of course. We want to do that. I mean, we all know, we learn from our mistakes far better than we do from our successes. On the training, everybody says, you want to train at game speed. Ron Polk taught us all that, years ago. So we try to do everything that we possibly can, at game speed, and then obviously deal with those adversities as they come up.
I love what you said about the game speed. And, a lot of the things we talk about, I address them because I think it's very important that we begin with young kids in these situations when they're 11, 12, 13 years old, because then by the time they get to you, boy, I mean, they're doing pretty good. When you say game speed, give our audience a little example, something you might do to create game speed for your players?
Sure. So some of the things that we do, like in our controlled scrimmages, for example, we put a lot of things on the clock. So, you know, for us, from the crack of the bat to the time an infielder fields a ball to the pop of the first baseman's glove, we'd like to see that in 4.2 seconds or better. So even when we're hitting fungos from a coach, you know, I mean, just a nice, easy fungo. And from the crack of that bat, it doesn't matter what the ball is hit. I mean, if it's a slow roller in a game, you got to come get that thing and you got to, you know, have the proper footwork transfer and hopefully make a good throw over to first base. So we put that on a clock, or, you know, a ground ball in the hole, you know, same thing. Are there infield hits? Absolutely. But at the same time, we want our guys to really kind of build that clock, have that internal clock on them, know when they can get their extra step and make a good solid throw, or when they got to get rid of the ball. So that would be just one thing. When we pick off, we have our pitchers work on just pickoff moves at first base. We're going to put a runner on there. And again, they're on a clock. We'd like to see that, you know, right around 1 second from the time they have their first movement to the pop of the first baseman's glove.
Mm.
And so having a base runner there makes it real. You know, base runners get to gauge, you know, what their distance is, and pitchers get to really gauge, you know, how good their move is. So just things like that. Same thing, outfielders, you know, we want that clock. Let's say there's, you know, man on second. Again, this kind of dictates what kind of ball it is, but we'd like to see that ball from the crack of the bat to the, you know, the throat of the catcher, you know, somewhere around 7.5 to 8 seconds. And that's for our level. So, you know, for, mm-hmm. you know, other higher levels, it's probably, you know, a little bit different, but for us. And so, you know, we want to always have, you know, again, that competitive excellence. It's a way for us to quantify our drill work. You know, you can have that measured and guys can compete against each other and they can kind of see where they're at. You know, it gives them a gauge to, you know, how to improve. So those are things that we do to create that game speed.
I tell you what, you know, all of us fall under this gap. Some of us that are a little older can fall under this trap a little bit. I'm going to ask you in a minute about your coaching style, how it's changed, or some things you might have changed throughout the years. But I do want to know, when you're setting up a defensive situation for your practice, you know, traditionally it was, you know, it's been always done one way possibly, or some guys have better ideas. Let's say a bunt situation, you're working with your club and you're going over your bunt situations. Give us an idea how you would, you know, it's the first day maybe, or the second day where you guys have been working on it. How would you set that situation up and address all the areas that the players need to cover, whether it's your first baseman, second baseman? How's the teaching going on there?
Mm-hmm. So, well, the teaching, it's going to change a little bit from guy to guy. I mean, we start with, you know, I mean, everybody, you know, the adaptive learning process, you know, you learn to learn, you learn, and then you learn to relearn. And so, for us, you know, guys learn in several different ways. Sometimes it's you know, it's through hearing. Some guys, they need to see it. Some guys need to really literally feel it, you know, be in the situation and learn from the actual feeling of that situation. So first you need to kind of learn your players. So if it's on day one, the first thing we would do is start on a whiteboard, you know, in that team meeting situation. That's basically how we start all of our team defense sessions. So just, you know, a quick little 15, 20 minutes in our clubhouse, boom. Give them some whiteboard tactical stuff, and then we go outside and we do it. So we want them to see it first, the kind of all the moving parts. Then once we get into those tactical practices where we got guys out on the field, typically I'll have an assistant coach hitting the fungo or putting balls in play. We try to do as much of it live. If we have our hitters in the box and pitchers throwing, then we'll do it that way too. But, you know, you said day one, so we probably mm-hmm. wouldn't have that going on day one. We're just going to, you know, kind of do a 50% walkthrough, move our pieces around. I'm standing out in the center of the infield and directing, you know, the defense. But we're teaching why. We're teaching why we need to have a certain rotation, if it's a wheel play or if it's just a basic coverage. But, you know, getting all those things that, you know, we're talking to them about why we want it this way, why we're going to vacate a bag or, you know, switch a rotation if a catcher's covering third base or something, or, you know, third baseman crash and whatever the play might be.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we want to explain why we're doing it. And so that's kind of how we do that. And then we amp up the speed and the intensity as we get through it. So hopefully by the end of the drill, we actually have, you know, our pitchers throwing live and our hitters are bunting live and base runners at first. And, you know, we might be trying to go first to third on something specific or whatever it might be. But again, we always will start with the whiteboard and a little bit of tactical play, explaining those things and then putting the guys in the positions so they can see it and feel it.
Has Bradley Unger, over the years, you've been coaching, you know, I think you're young because I'm a lot older, but you've been coaching quite a few years, you know, great experience. How have you, something, give us one or two areas that Bradley Unger's changed and that, you know, you may have done 5 years ago or even 3 years ago?
Sure.
That all of a sudden, you know, you said, nah, I found a better way to do it. Maybe I learned it from somebody. Maybe I made it up myself. And why you changed, obviously.
Well, I think for me, I mean, boy, that's a good question.
There's so many areas.
Yeah.
Going to.
So for me, I think it was when I started in the NPA, and Coach House really had so many far smarter guys than myself, but, you know, James Andrews and Greg Rose and just great, great people who are far smarter than me. But if it just, you know, they had a way to quantify the information. So I wouldn't say that the technical skill teaching has changed a whole lot, other than the fact that, you know, the way we measure things has changed a lot because technology has changed. You know, we've got high-speed cameras at 1,000 frames per second. I mean, some cameras are even more powerful than that now. You know, so Tom House has a saying where, you know, 30 frames per second, you know, but 1,000 frames per second doesn't lie.
Right.
And so, you know, the naked eye can only see 30 to 32 frames per second. So what we think we're seeing isn't necessarily the truth. And I think so when we were, you know, teaching hitting or teaching pitching mechanics or whatever it might be, when you get somebody on a high-speed camera, boy, you really see their kinematic sequence and you can really see where they might be struggling with angular velocity and just their actual biomechanics and how they move. And so I think that was one thing, how it changed and how I've changed in approaching players. So I think, you know, at the beginning of my career, it was more autocratic, where I just kind of dictated my practices. This is how we're going to do it, guys. This is how we're going to, you know, we're going to cover team defense today, and away we went. And everything really just focused on from top down, you know, me telling our players, this is what we're going to do. There wasn't really a whole lot of why. It was just, this is how we're going to do it. Coach Unger said so. Where now it's very democratic or collaborative. You know, I want feedback from my players. I want to know what they're feeling, what they feel like they're struggling with. And then we use a company named Fusionetics. And so that's huge for human movement and players with their, you know, range of motion deficiencies. And we attack those deficiencies. We want that player feedback. We want to look at the qualitative numbers and that data. And then we want to attack those deficiencies. So we really have kind of switched our focus for the technical skill development of players to really almost like a laboratory style setting, to where we really do, we do a stat test called a screen test, assess and train. It's really a point in time capacity measurement, but it attacks, it finds out, you know, where's a player's deficiency? Is it their legs? Is it their hips? Is it their torso, their shoulder, their arm, wherever it might be. And then we go after those, and that's how we build our players. That's how we've had success. So that's kind of how I've changed. I learned that a lot, you know, through Coach House. And the NPA regional directors, Mark Sheehan, was instrumental in that, of course. You know, just great human beings. Dean DeFaxis was also part of that. And, you know, just some great people that I've learned from. And I think as a coach, you know, not having that ego that's too big where you think you know everything, and being able to ask those questions and, you know, maybe get a little bit outside of your skin and, you know, not in your comfort zone. I think that's where we learn. And, you know, obviously we grow from adversity and failure, too.
Absolutely. And love the shout out to Tom House and Mark Sheehan. And, you know, both of them, obviously, you know, and Tom's definitely revolutionized the game and the way we think and the way we do things. So I can't agree with you more, because they really challenge, you know, our teaching when it comes to the technology that they have. Now, Bradley Unger may not have done this, and that's okay. Not a problem if you haven't. But I always like to ask this because, you know, I'm always, you know, when I do seminars around the world, one of the things I tell coaches is you obviously want to learn from everybody. You know, we coaches all talk about that, right? You're learning constantly from everybody. You go on the internet, you go on social media, you're always trying to find a better way to do something. But what's something, because I tell coaches, not only do you want to learn from others, but you know what? You've got to come up with some good ideas yourself through trial and error, you know, through just saying, hey, how can I do this better? Maybe there's a better way that nobody else came up with. Is there something Bradley Unger's come up with that our coaches can learn from that you came up with that you didn't get from anybody else?
You know, I would say,
this is, you know, what's nice about this, if you don't have one, that's fine. There's no problem with that, but this will challenge you later on then, right? Because it'll make you think a little bit.
So here's, Here's one thing. I wouldn't say so much from the teaching. I think we all kind of steal everybody's stuff, and you know, by the end of it, it's just kind of a hodgepodge of stuff you put together. But I would say the one thing where our program has really revolutionized over the last year and a half, I have a great assistant coach I did at Waubonsie. His name's Rodney Lopez. I got to give him credit because he's just a phenomenal man. And we worked really well together. So we had all this data. And Rodney and I, we both did this together, but we digitized it all. So we had all this data in our workouts, you know, we're measuring, and I was old school, you know, pencil and paper. And I mean, you end up, by the end of the year, you've got thousands of sheets of paper all throughout your office. I mean, just, it took forever. I mean, there was no way to really, I mean, yeah, we had all this qualitative data, but how do you use it? You know, I mean, yeah, we're measuring. And that's one of the things in social media, you know, you have some great organizations out there that are great at measuring and it looks great on Twitter, but how do you use that data? I mean, that's the big problem, you know? And so I think that's really where, you know, our industry is going. The guys who can really use that data and produce results are going to be the coaches that are left standing at the end of the day. And have that longevity. So I think for us, it was really important for us to digitize it. So now every single one of our players has an app on their phone. It's on their tablet. It's on their laptop. It's with Google Drive. So literally after a practice, everything that we collect is inputted immediately, and they have instant feedback in every single category that we measure, over 100 plus categories, and it's right there on their phone. And so there's never a point in time where a player has to say, hey, you know, where am I at, coach? You know, if you're the fourth second baseman and you're in fourth in every single category that we have, well, guess what? You're probably fourth on the depth chart too. So, I mean, that's really, you know, as far as for us, it was competitive excellence is a really big piece to our program. We want guys competing in everything that they do in a workout, especially in training. So for us, that is really, you know, everything we do, exit velocity, launch angle, I mean, you name it, you know, I mean, all the hot topic buttons out there.
That's all on their Google Drive.
It is. Everything's on their Google Drive. They have every single piece of information that we measure. And it's right there on their phone. So, you know, it's, I mean, that helps us a lot because it really allows us to go back into a time. If you see a guy plateau, you know, again, you know, we want to measure, quantify, defend. So if you can't defend it, you know, then what are we doing? And so we want to see those results. If a guy plateaus, it gives us a great opportunity to go back into their workouts and find out, hey, this is where it started going sideways. You know, what happened here? You know, sometimes you get a guy who says, oh, you know what, that was my girlfriend and I broke up. Other times it might be, you know, that's when I, you know, I tweaked my hamstring. Or sometimes it's, you know what, I don't know, I'm giving you everything I got, coach, and I'm not seeing a result here. So maybe we need to take a look at the program and rewrite his customized velo or his swing velocity or whatever it is we're using. So it gives us an opportunity to make adjustments as we go and make sure that we're getting the best out of our guys and we're training hopefully in the smartest ways that we can utilize, you know, maximize the time that we have with them.
And you give your players the responsibilities through this technology, they're able to look at all the details, and now it's their responsibility if they want to get better to improve those areas.
It's absolutely their responsibility in those aspects. Yes. I mean, we look at that on a daily basis, my coaching staff and I, and that's kind of, you know, it helps us practice plan. So we teach within a set of systems, you know, everything that we have, but those systems are customized to each individual player. Now that's the technical skill development piece. Now you still have, you know, guys who need to get volume work, you're going to have practices where you're out there hitting massive fungos. You're going to, you know, all those types of things. Mm-hmm. You're taking BP and, you know, you still have the aspects of the tactical piece of the game. But the individual skill training pieces, you know, the velocity programs, the swing velocity programs, the human movement performance piece, the range of motions, you know, all those different things. I mean, all those programs are customized to each player's deficiencies. And so again, on that app, they have, you know, the autonomy, you know, again, we're only as good as the information that we get. So if you have a player who is not logging in, you know, their weight room numbers, or is just kind of filling in and, you know, fills it in at the end of a workout and just guesses, well, you know, all of our customized programs are built off of your numbers. So we're only as good as what they give us. So again, there is some responsibility, you know, it is a collaborative effort. It absolutely is, but that's what we want. We want our student athletes to take ownership of their development. You know, it isn't just coaches, you know, spewing and regurgitating information to them. We do not want a clinical setting or a clinician every single practice. We really want it to be more of a laboratory setting where guys, you know, are doing, you know, their block training or random training or, you know, again, in deep training. You know, deep training is where an individual is practicing privately in with controlled variables. And so that's actually, studies have shown that deep training is the best possible training for growth and development than in anything in a group setting. So we actually want to make those, you know, you've heard the term, you know, you're making a coach or a player their best coach. Mm-hmm. And that's truly what we're trying to accomplish in our workouts.
So, you know, and I love that you brought that up because I want to address that. Deep training, mm-hmm. love the term. That's when somebody is, when people aren't looking, what are you doing?
Yeah, essentially, yeah. So it's individual work. I guess the book definition for deep training would be individual work with controlled variables in a private setting. So a player who might do some mirror work, right? You get in front of a mirror and it goes through their mechanics, but it's only them in the mirror. So they get to they get to control their variables. They might be doing some patterning. Patterning, at least my definition of it, is through the NPA and Tom Howe. It's proprio neural facilitation, PNF. Nerves talking to muscle. So that's where our patterning comes in. You're getting a lot of volume work. You can use, you can call it that too. But that's where a player would, you know, in the old days, I mean, we would throw balls off the wall and field them ourselves, right? We didn't need an infield coach to tell us, hey, you know, fingertips to the ground, you know, I want to see the bean of your cap, you know, when you field, you know, things like that, you know, get the ball out front, you know, all those different things and cues that, you know, coaches have used over the years. You know, again, you know, I'm not saying there's not a time for that. There is, you know, you want to instruct guys and, you know, that's what a coach is for, to help guide them. But at the same time, you do want to see some players take some ownership and get some work in on their own as well. But if they know what they're supposed to work on, if they have the numbers right there in front of them, I mean, it really is a powerful tool. I mean, they're able to work on their deficiencies when, like you said, when nobody else is looking. And so it really does allow them to take more ownership of their game.
You know what? Interesting. I'll tell you what popped in my head when you talked about this. Two things. One, Japanese players, you know, who talk about talking to your nerves or nerves talking to your muscles. Mm-hmm. You know, they just do it over and over and over and over again. Yeah. It just becomes repetitive. But then on the same point, you'll see them, because I've caught them many times doing things on their own, and they might be who knows where doing it, whether it's home or at a field, and they're just doing things on their own, just like you talked about. Then the other side of it was the Latin players who also, you know, do a lot of it. They practice a lot and they kind of learn from their mistakes as they're doing it. They don't have anybody telling them what to do.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, what better way to learn? I mean, and when you do it in that scenario, what's the risk of having failure there? There's no pressure. There's zero pressure in that setting when you're in a room by yourself. If you make a mistake, you know, it's just you. Nobody else knows about it. Yeah. So you don't need to impress anybody. There's no shame involved. So it really does allow a player, and that's why deep training, I think, is just so powerful. It really allows a player the autonomy to go ahead and feel comfortable making some mistakes and learning from those. Hey, that didn't work. Let me do this. So I think it's really a valuable tool, as long as the players know what they're supposed to be working on, or what the end game is. I mean, they got to have a big picture view. We call that our macro view, but we do, you know, we want to give the guys kind of a broad overview of what we're looking to accomplish, you know, whether it be, you know, exit velocity of a certain number, or we want to see you grow this, you know, we want to see a range of motion of, you know, 20 degrees in dorsiflexion. I mean, what the heck does that mean to most people? You know, they don't know, you know, but when
I'm
they
not
get
sure
in our
I
system
do.
And, right. But when we can teach that, when we can show them that stuff, when they start going through some of those modalities and they have that data, then you know what? They know what they're striving for. They know what they're trying to accomplish. And so that really is a powerful tool for them. And so it's yielded us tremendous results. It's allowed us to build a lot of guys and see a lot of growth.
Now, you've got a great advantage being with MPA for many years. You know, obviously you've been at the high end of the technology spectrum. You've seen it all there. What technology, because you only have so much time to, you know, and so much technology to use. What do you use the most? Give us some ideas, some programs that you use and why you use them or how you use them to benefit your players and team.
Well, for us, I think, we do a lot of swing velocity radar readings. We do a lot of Rapsodo measurements. I think the Modus sleeve, Modus Global, we were part of that study at Waubonsie on their chronic and acute valgus study for workloads and pitchers. That's given us a tremendous amount of data.
Where you could wear the sleeve in game, in practice.
That is correct.
And it measures everything, right?
It does. It does. For pitchers, it'll basically, I mean, the science, I mean, it measures a whole host of data. For us, the big number for us was Newton meters, which is force or foot pounds outside that releases. Basically, when you throw a pitch, it's a certain amount of effort, whether it be a high effort throw or a low effort throw. Kind of equate, you know, if coaches out there that are listening, kind of think of like a pitcher when they start throwing for the first few throws of the day. You know, those are nice, easy tosses as they stretch it out to long toss. And then when they bring it back in, some, you know, guys will call those pull downs. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, whatever the pitcher's routine is, and then when he gets on a mound, you know, or in the bullpen, and then he gets on the mound, you know, so he's going to have a certain level of effort in those throws. And so every single throw a pitcher has a certain number of Newton meters that comes out. And so those are the Newton meters where really how we build their arm care recovery routines. We got to put that amount of energy or foot pounds back into the arm in order to keep those guys healthy. So when we do write their custom velo programs and custom swing velocity programs and, you know, their joint integrity program, you know, all these different things. I mean, that's the number that we're trying to hit. So to keep guys, you know, because our motto in the MPA is health first, performance second. Mm. And so those are the types of things that we're doing to keep those guys healthy. But those are the big technology ones. I mean, HitTrax is great. You know, we've used that, and some of that data is fantastic for us. Just, you know, gives the guys feedback. And obviously HitTrax has a great software program where, you know, the platform, the guys love hitting, you know, BP on Wrigley Field, things like that. But
is that where you actually, you know, where the ball goes?
Yeah. And it measures, you know, it measures exit velocity, launch angle. I mean, it's got a whole host of things that it measures as well. You know, and we've used blast sensors and Diamond Kinetics. We've had both of those in our programs throughout the years, and we get feedback there. And then we use heavy swing bats. That's a knob-loaded bat, helps you slot the rear elbow, get into the barrel into a lag position. And again, you know, whether coaches believe in that, don't believe in that, but we're a big believer in that. And so, you know, we want to square up baseballs and hit them hard. So that seems to help our guys. They can use those off the tee, use them in front toss, short toss, really in any BP setting as well. And then when they get the live pitch, and they'll go ahead and go back to their normal bat. But it's a great training bat for our guys and just helps them train hand path without really having to really focus on it too much.
You know, Bradley, I found that, you know, the game is the game. Player, like, you know, kids or players have always been, you know, they're human beings. They're not, you know, just regular people. But obviously the times have changed how we communicate with players, you know, and they love the technology aspect. So this type of technology reinforces what we're doing, good or bad, but also it makes it more fun. And that, I mean, and we're all kids at hand, whether you're a big league player or a college player. I get the idea that they all like that fun, so that's why they love this technology, so that's why it's also good to use.
Right. And I agree with that. And I think, you know, like we talked about a little bit earlier, is about, you know, guys learn in different ways, you know. And so as a coach, you know, I mean, it's our job to either, you know, frame it in a certain way or reframe it in a certain way so those guys understand it. You know, again, I don't want, you know, we don't want paralysis by analysis either. You know, we want guys to mm-hmm. be able to come in and, you know, get after it in a workout and know that they're getting better. But at the same time, you know, we want to be able to go back and have a reference point too. So, so sometimes, you know, I'm the one here to crunch some numbers for them. I don't expect them to do all of that for us, but certainly, we want them to be able to have some of that data. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, that competitive excellence, that, you know, again, these are measurable. So, I mean, you're going to get some quantitative data here and you're able to rank that. You can put that in an Excel spreadsheet. That's not very difficult, you know, and you can absolutely rank it. And so it really gives the guys some feedback. And, you know, if you're at the bottom of that depth chart, you know, you want to climb that mountain. And if you're at the top of it, well, you want to stay there. So, again, you know, it's just another motivational tool. Empowerment really is the word that we use a lot with our guys. You know, we want to empower them. We want them to wake up. You just said it. This is a game. It's fun. We really stress to our guys that, you know, the guy who made that error last night, guess what? The sun's going to come out tomorrow. It's going to come up tomorrow. So, you know, it's probably not as, you know, your lows aren't as low as they seem and your highs probably aren't as high as they seem. So, you know, if we can, you know, kind of get not necessarily even keel. We want them to enjoy and, you know, celebrate their successes, but we certainly want them to learn from their, you know, failures and not be crippled by them. And this has been a great way for us to measure that and keep guys, you know, focused up.
Well, it's got to make it a little easier when you make the lineup or when guys are playing. You know, why, you know, somebody might say, well, how come I'm not playing, coach? Well, there's a lot of stats here to be able to show guys why they're not playing.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, I ask my guys this all the time. you know, who do you think makes the lineup? And you know, every, and most of the guys will say, well, you.
You and, used to be and, that way.
Yeah, and yeah. I say no. I don't right. get them. I mean, I get to pick what order you hit in, but I don't. Yep. I don't make the lineup, guys. The best nine guys are going to play. Now I get to pick your replacement if you start making mistakes. You know, as a head coach, we get to do that. But honestly, you know, if it's a pretty subjective environment, and you know, you don't want it to be subjective. I mean, if you can help it, you know, we want, you know, I'm not going to say that there's no gut instinct in certain situations. I mean, baseball is too spiritual of a sport for that. But, I think, you know, there's some great managers out there that have great instincts and just, you know, might not be the norm or the popular choice. And they go with a guy and sure enough, he delivers that day. So I'm not going to say you can't, you know, always, or, you know, go with data, but still the data, you know, numbers don't lie. And so, you know, if you trust the system that we have in place, you know, I think, you know, our guys, again, if they buy in, they trust it, they're going to be really successful.
Why have the programs where you've been successful? If you had to identify things you do that, and then I understand it's you, your staff, you know, it's the college, you know, your athletic director, the president of school, those are all key components, obviously, to being successful. But why are you successful? What have you done that you believe makes you successful when it comes to, you know, controlling a baseball team?
I think for me, you know, I think it's just the way that it's delivered to the student athletes. And I think every coach is different, you know, but for me, what works for me is, you know, leaving the ego, you know, at the door, so to speak. I don't have all the answers. I mean, you know, we've got some really good ones, but we don't have all of the answers. And I think, you know, being willing to say that, you know, I don't know everything. I don't expect my players to know everything. My job as a coach isn't to know everything. My job as a coach is to try to prepare them for every scenario they might see on a baseball field and hopefully be able to know what to do, when to do it, and react on a field. And, you know, if a player ever comes into our program and, or, you know, into our dugout after a play and says, hey, coach, I had no idea what I was supposed to do there. Well, then I failed. That's not his fault. That's my fault. Mm. So for me, I think it's just, you know, trying to prepare guys to really, you know, again, embrace the failure, but go out there and be really successful and just play this game like a kid, like you said earlier. And I think given all these intangibles and competing every day and trying to, again, empower the guys to can't wait to get to the workout every day, because, you know, baseball is mundane. It is a game of repetition and volume work and, you know, things like that. So finding ways to nuances to get guys, you know, to stay motivated and focused during those dog days of winter. I think goes a long way. And then, you know, why we've been successful, honestly, I think is just the relationship with the guys. You know, I think every successful coach out there, I think all of them have great rapport with their guys, you know, and you know, you build that where the players, they don't want to let you down and they don't want to let each other down. You know, we're all in this thing together. And I mean, that's usually a pretty powerful and special organization when you can do things like that, when everybody mm-hmm. starts, you know, rooting for each other. You know, so I mean, I think that's kind of how, you know, how we've done it. But I think, you know, you need good leadership, you need strategy, and you need culture. It's not one or the other. I think you got to have all of it.
And if I was videotaping Bradley Unger in a dugout during a game, whether it be a regular season game or whether it be, you know, when you went to the World Series, what would I see and what, you know, watching Bradley Unger during a game as a coach?
I think you'd see me probably smile a lot. I like to have fun out there with those guys. I mean, I don't get to play anymore. So, you know, I kind of, you know, I know you don't want to say you're living precariously through your guys, but I am. I hurt probably more than they hurt when they're not successful. And then, you know, I'm their biggest fan when they do something well, you know, I'm cheering for them. So I like to laugh and joke around with them and have a good time, but you're not going to see a whole lot of, you know, I got, you know, again, body posture, body language, you know, I'm big on that. So, you know, you're probably not going to see me pouting a whole lot. You know, it's, you know, you try not to go negative. You try to, you know, keep these guys going and you know, you want to have fun with them. You know, again, the sun's going to come up tomorrow, guys. I mean, you know, it's a 9-inning game. Let's play this thing through a full 9 innings and just see what happens. If we're doing the right things in training, you know, the wins take care of themselves, you know, so, you know, we've been real successful. We've had guys that wanted to, you know, train and get better, and and we've won out on the field. So hopefully that's what we'll bring here to Culver Stockton.
And when you had a bad game, how do you do it after a ball game?
Well, after the game, I mean, sometimes, I'm not going to say we never talk about it. There are times where we'll have if it's something that's a tactical thing where, maybe we went to the wrong bag or we, executed the wrong play or something like that, just with the grind of a season, sometimes it's difficult. But for the most part, if it's a bad game, typically we go out in the outfield and we'll just have a break. Hey, it wasn't our day, guys. I think Paul Maneri does that at LSU as well. I read that in one of his articles in the collegiate newspaper, and I thought that was just so brilliant. There's not many guys better than him. So, I don't go out down the line and talk about it for an hour and yell and scream and hoot and holler. That doesn't do anybody any good. I spend more time probably when we win, just because it's easier to neglect a lot of things when you win. There's a lot of teaching opportunities. I will say in our huddles when we win, we'll start with not to put a damper on the win that we just had, but we will start with some things that we take notes throughout the game. Obviously, we'll start with some things that we need to clean up a little bit, and then we finish with all the praise. So we always try to finish on a good note. And if it's just a getaway day and it wasn't our day, that's kind of how we break it. Hey guys, it wasn't our day. Tomorrow is another day. We'll come in a little bit early, maybe pre-BP or something like that. We might have to do something on the whiteboard, tactical stuff. We won't even address it at all. We'll just get out there the next day and play a little bit. I'm not big on a lot of powwow meetings, pregame and pep talks and all that stuff. I mean, I think if we're preparing our guys the right way, I mean, they know what they got to do. If I got to cheerlead for them to get them ready to play a game, that's probably not a guy that's going to play at a real high level. At least, that's, our view. But, there's some guys out there that do a great job with that, and God bless them. They're special individuals. So there's always many ways of doing something.
Are there ways you communicate with your players, when they're in classrooms or where, today's players, are there any ways you communicate with them individually? Because maybe you can't see them face-to-face all the time.
Sure. Yeah. So we use a couple different things, but I guess the big one probably, and a lot of guys use it, just the GroupMe app. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how we do our mass communications with some of our players. And then FrontRunner is a good one too for like a recruiting platform. We're able to reach out to guys and things like that. Just stay in contact with them. Those would be the. Text message is always a good one too. But those would be the big ones. And then once they get on campus here, Culver Stockton, again, it's a pretty intimate campus, and athletics is right at the heart of campus. So, I mean, it's almost impossible. My office is almost dead center of the campus, so it's kind of hard not to see all these guys walking around. But if we see them in passing, we'll give them a little fist bump and on with our day.
And what about, is it an open door policy, closed door? And how do they go to your assistants? If there's something going on in their lives or things they need to communicate, how does that work?
Yeah, if it's something like that, then yeah, they usually, so we do a few things in our dynamic warmups or, in certain things, we always, are walking up and down the lines when we warm up. We do have coaches lead that. I'm out there as well. So just ask guys, how's it going? How's class going? Those types of things. And usually it gives them a pretty good opportunity. Hey, how'd that economics project turn out for you? And sometimes they can say, hey, coach, I don't know. It's bad. It's terrible. Hey, see me after practice. Or sometimes they'll come up and say, hey, coach, can I talk to you? And sometimes they go to the assistant. The assistant will typically come to me if it's, something, important. And then, we'll have a meeting. But typically it's that's on me though. I have to build that rapport. I have to open that door, so to speak, at the beginning to facilitate that trust and integrity that these guys, they absolutely can come to me with, with any problem that they have. I think any coach will tell you, they care about their guys, obviously, and we're no different here. At the same time, they're like my kids, and so mm-hmm. I don't think I'm alone in that as coaches. I think we all kind of have that mentality. Their successes are our success, so we want to give them every opportunity and give them all the support that they need. And if they do need help, then we certainly want to go ahead and make sure that they have that too.
Fantastic. I'll tell you what, this has been outstanding. And Bradley, here's how we love to end the show. There's always something that didn't get a chance to talk about, but you really wanted to mention to help our coaches, players, parents, we have people listening all over the world at different levels. So if there's an important area that you wanted to focus on and give them some advice, whatever that advice may be, this is your time, then we'll close it off.
Okay. Well, I would say, you know, me being a collegiate coach, and I know this isn't probably the sexy thing to say, but parents, let the kids have a great time playing. So on the car ride home, don't ask them or criticize games. Just enjoy it. Tell them it was awesome watching you play. Can't wait for the next game. And let the kid come around to you telling you about they weren't happy with this type of play or you know, what happened in this at bat or what defensive play, whatever it was. You know, I think, you know, sometimes you see some youth parents that you know, they live, they're identified by the success of their child out on a field. And you even see it at the college ranks too at times, you know, and it's just, that couldn't be further from the truth, and it just puts more pressure on the student athlete. So I think if you let your kids play, enjoy it, enjoy watching them. And then on the flip side is just the importance of academics. I mean, it is so absolutely incredibly important. If any player, you know, every kid grows up and says they want to play D1 baseball, and you know, I was one of those as well. And I'm going to say that if you don't get it done in the classroom, you will never play D1 baseball. There's just so many good players out there, and the success on the field, like I said earlier, will absolutely correlate to the classroom success. So spend a great deal of time in honing your skills, but also spend a great deal of time, you know, taking pride in your academic work too, because it'll go a long way for you, and it'll open up doors and opportunities. So, you know, I'll leave you with this, that, you know, we tell our guys, even, you know, the JUCO players, but we tell the high school recruits this as well. Mm-hmm. Let your athletic ability dictate where you're going to go play. Your academics, you can go anywhere, but your athletic ability will dictate where you can play. So if you really subscribe to that, then you're going to have a ton of opportunity when it comes time for picking what school you want to play for. And then you really have, you know, the world at your fingertips, to be quite honest.
Great way to end the show. That is Bradley Unger, the head baseball coach at Culver Stockton College. I was just checking out the website. 98% of students are employed or graduate school within 6 months of graduating at Culver Stockton College. You've got a great baseball coach. You've got a great college. Check them out on Twitter. It is at B_Unger, UNGER. 34. That is the actual number, 34. So check them out. Bradley, man, thank you. I know you've got, you're recruiting all the time. You're busy. There's a lot of things going on. You just got the head coaching job there. Thanks for being on the show, buddy. Really appreciate it. Keep up the great work.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
All right, folks, that ends the show. Thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. Thank you to our loyal listeners, and thank you to the new listeners. And check us out on baseballoutsidethebox.com. And don't forget to email me at petercaliendo@att.net. Check me on YouTube. Just go to Peter Caliendo. Check baseball tips. You'll see all the baseball tips we put on YouTube. Special thanks to Brian Crocker, our producer with the Lineup Media Group, and our special guest, Bradley Unger, the head coach at Culver Stockton College. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Hey, listen, have a great coaching day, and I will see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.